early morning of September 29, 1997. Authorities in Clark County received a call that a woman was walking along Interstate 80 in Auburn, California. She said she had been kidnapped and raped. The dispatcher called me at home and asked me to go to the hospital. The victim was shaken, distraught even, but relieved to have made it out alive. She told police what had happened. Imagine. She was walking home from school on Washington, D.C. or Nevada when she heard a vehicle pull up behind her. Told officers that a woman was driving the van and that a man was giving her directions to the interstate. She did not know if the woman was also being held captive. She tried to get some support or help from the driver of the van. But the victim soon realized that the woman was the man's accomplice in his kidnapping. Then they took him across the mountains to Auburn. While in captivity, the woman was sexually assaulted several times.
She tried to remain calm throughout the ordeal, but she was scared to death because she thought he was going to kill her.
They were listening to a Johnny Cash song, Some Prison Blues, in which he sings, "I shot a man in Reno just to watch him die." She asked him if he had ever killed anyone. She was afraid of the answer, but he replied, "No." I think these two criminals can be described as sexual predators. They were sexually sadistic, meaning they enjoyed watching their victims suffer, humiliating them, and dominating them. They were incapable of feeling compassion for another human being.
She wanted to remember as many details as possible, so that if she survived the ordeal, they could identify the man.
After several hellish hours, the couple finally dropped her off on a deserted California road, nearly 100 miles from where they had abducted her.
The van stopped nearby and ordered her to get dressed. They then handed her her purse and backpack.
They told her not to walk alone in Reno at night again. They even told her she was lucky to have been picked up by such kind people. Then they let her out of the van, told her to turn around, count to 20, and drove off. The woman walked toward the highway where she flagged down a car. Despite her shock, the victim provided a detailed description of her captors.
She made sure to look around her carefully, to remember the faces around her. She listened carefully to the voices. She also remembered the smells, and she had noticed that the man called the woman Mickey.
Criminals are much more dangerous in pairs because they are ready to commit acts much more serious than they would if they were alone. They encourage each other in their deviant behavior. Their behavior quickly degenerates because they justify the other's ideas and actions. They often end up committing acts much more serious than they would have done alone. The police draw up sketches and issue a wanted poster to find the suspects as well as their van.
After sending the sketches to the media in California and Nevada, we began following up on the leads we had found. We drove through the area where the victim had been abducted, or PF. We went door to door at all the businesses and residences in the area to get information.
Since the victim crossed the border into Nevada, we had to notify the FBI.
It's very rare to see a man and a woman sexually assault a stranger. It gave us goosebumps because we knew we were dealing with two very dangerous predators. There had been some notorious murderous couples in the area in the past. In the 1980s, Gerald and Charlene Gallego committed kidnappings, rapes, and murders in the Sacramento area. I believe they killed about 10 people.
The Gallegos had disposed of one of their victims in Clipper Capapa, the same city where the young kidnapping and rape victim from Reno was recently released. Authorities are concerned that they may be copycats.
These types of cases are treated as a priority by the FBI because it's very likely that the perpetrators will attack another victim. So we need to find them as soon as possible. So we're focused on these cases. We pursue all leads, gather evidence, and conduct interrogations as soon as possible.
More than a month passes without any results from their efforts. The case joins the ranks of other unsolved cases. November 3, 1997, in Pleasanton, California. It's a quiet evening at work for 17-year-old Lynn Marshall.
There's been another sexual assault. Two people tried to rape a woman. They beat her and took pictures of her. Then they told her that if she revealed what he did to her, he would pass them on and blackmail her. Of course, she was afraid he would kill her.
Linda was released and immediately went to the police station. But rather than tell the truth about her attackers, she chose to lie, afraid that her attackers would pass on the pictures they took of her. She claimed that she had been abducted and raped by three men. The police find her story suspicious, and when he asks her to explain the contradictions in her story, she withdraws her accusations.
These people often have to perform increasingly elaborate, serious, and varied acts in order to feel the same satisfaction as they did at the beginning. Their fantasies and the acts they perform to satisfy their sexual desires exert such a powerful force that they cannot resist them. Many of these criminals who commit acts of extreme violence or sadism are unable to stop. On November 19, 1997, the Sacramento police receive a call about a rape. Officers go to the residence to take a statement. Two teenage girls tell the police that they were raped on two separate occasions by the same couple. The most shocking thing was to learn that one of the girls had been assaulted by her own mother, who had then offered her to her boyfriend to rape in turn. Someone who would offer their own child to another sex offender and take part in the assault and abuse is just as guilty as the offender. This type of person certainly shares the same twisted fantasies and desires as the sex offender. This is also the type of person who is incapable of feeling compassion or affection for their child. The story doesn't end there. The two teenage girls also told us that they had heard about the kidnapping and rape of Reno on television a few weeks earlier.
Yeah.
And that the descriptions of the suspects and their vehicles matched those of their parents.
The girls revealed the names of their attackers to investigators. They were James Froggy Davio and Misha Mickey Misha.
A day or two after the kidnapping and rape of Reno, Micho and DeVito learned that they were wanted by the police when they saw David Gio's sketch in the newspapers and on television. So they knew from the start that the police might very well suspect them. I checked the files of the two suspects and discovered that David Joe had recently been added to the Sacramento sex offender list. Michelle Michaud, on the other hand, was a prostitute and had been arrested several times for prostitution.
The police are not surprised by the long criminal history of the two suspects.
James Anthony Davio was born in 1960 in San Francisco, California. He had a very unhappy childhood. His mother had a very authoritarian personality at home. He began committing sexual offenses at a very young age. He had many psychological problems and carried with him a lot of rage and anger, especially towards women. Michelle Michaud was 2 years older than James DeVito. She grew up in the Sacramento area and ran away from home at the age of 17. That's when she met a pimp for whom she began working the streets, and she ended up working in massage parlors.
James David Joe and Michelle Michaud met in October 1996 at the bar where David worked.
It was their meth addiction that brought Micho and Davido closer.
Methamphetamine is a psychostimulant that can be injected, snorted, or smoked. The main effects are euphoria and increased impulsivity. There can also be paranoia, aggression, violent behavior, and delusions. The person may lose touch with reality and their value system may be affected. If the addict does not have a very solid value system, it will quickly degenerate and the user is more likely to make rash actions.
Micho and Davido tended to project onto each other what they were looking for in a partner. Micho even said later that she saw Davido as a father figure, a strong figure on whom the family could rely. And I believe that David Gio saw her as someone who would do anything to satisfy him. That's all he expected from a woman.
Someone who is used to treating women as objects, as Davido did, knows very well the advantages of associating with a woman addicted to methamphetamine. He is then able to provide her with the money necessary to maintain this addiction, or even directly provide her with methamphetamine, which becomes a way of dominating her.
Micho, a prostitute, and David Joe, a sexual predator, therefore form the ideal couple.
A prostitute's job is to use her body as an object and to sell it, to use it to satisfy different fantasies. A prostitute is the perfect complement to a man who only uses women to satisfy his needs. When they team up, all the conditions are met for him to commit extreme acts.
Investigators are further investigating the criminal duo. The discoveries became increasingly disturbing.
Michelle Michaud had a very intriguing personality. Mm. She knew how to present different sides of herself to different people. A priest at church might have considered her an excellent mother, the one who brings cookies to PTA meetings. But she could just as easily go to a bar, swear, and brag about working for the mafia or the Hell's Angels. James Davio was obsessed with serial killers. They fascinated him. He even had a collection of rapist and serial killer cards. He tried to imitate them to gain the same notoriety that he wanted to leave his mark.
Davio had a particular interest in so many serial killers, Gerald and Charlene Gallego. Charlene helped Gerald abduct and rape young women. It was an idea that really appealed to James Davio.
It's no surprise that Davio and Micho studied cases similar to theirs. It was part of the identity they had built for themselves, their imagination, and it's quite common among this type of person. We all have heroes. Sexual predators who commit sadistic acts often take inspiration from criminals who have committed similar acts to theirs before.
Michelle's daughter confessed to the police that the two criminals were living in their van in the hopes of escaping the biker gang to which David Joe belonged.
The Devil's Horse had accused James of stealing a safe containing money from a nightclub. He had taken his motorcycle and chased him out of the nightclub.
In the following days, the Sacramento police issued a wanted poster for James Davidio and Michelle Michaud for the sexual assault of the two minors. They also notified the Auburn authorities some warnings.
When suspects live in their vehicles, as in this case, the same procedure should be followed as in any other case. We had to interview people they knew and investigate where they were last seen. We had to ask a lot of questions and try to determine their whereabouts.
The Sacramento police forwarded the mugshots of the two criminals to the Auburn police. The woman they attacked confirmed that it was them. The manhunt was now on.
We formed a team of 20 FBI agents and enlisted the help of sheriff's offices, their agents, parole officers, a mate, and basically anyone who had a weapon and a badge. They stormed the area to question anyone who knew the criminals.
On November 25, 1997, while the operation to find the predators was in full swing, James Davidio and Michelle Michaud rented a hotel room in Pleasanton, California. Davidio knew the area well, having gone to high school there.
Pleasanton is considered an upper-middle-class community, you know, man. Most of the crimes committed in our city are robberies or burglaries.
There are very few violent crimes. One or two homicides a year at most. They had come to Pleasanton occasionally to select potential victims for their possible kidnappings.
Davidio and Micho acted like all criminals. They selected their victims in advance. They looked for vulnerable victims. People who, because of their circumstances, would become easy prey.
He was celebrating Thanksgiving at the residence of Davidio's ex-wife and her new husband. David's 15-year-old daughter, Jo, was also present. During the meal, David, Jo, and Micho spoke openly about their criminal intentions.
They saw themselves as serial killers. I believe they intended to commit increasingly heinous crimes.
In late 1997, the FBI and Northern California authorities launched a manhunt for two serial rapists, Michelle Micho and James Davidio. The suspects lived in their van. They drove around for hours, consumed methamphetamine, and attacked random victims.
Regular methamphetamine use by someone who was already a sexual predator made him commit even more serious acts.
Micho and Davidio went to celebrate Thanksgiving with Davidio's ex-wife and children. But they left quickly after the meal because Davidio couldn't stand his ex-wife's husband and they rented a room at a motel. His daughter accompanied them to the hotel. During the evening, David Joe tried to have sex with his daughter, but she rejected him. He insisted and raped her. It would later be learned that he had already done this four or five times before.
Davidio is a psychopath. He is completely incapable of forming a normal, healthy attachment to another human being or feeling empathy. He sees others only as objects to be exploited for his own personal pleasure. He is a predator in the truest sense of the word.
Davidio and Micho do not realize the scale of the search operation to find them.
The FBI, in collaboration with investigators and the Sacramento authorities, were scouring the area for PF in order to find them.
But the suspects, still under the influence of drugs, set off in search of their next victim.
David and Micho often said they wanted to go hunting, which meant they were looking for their next victims.
Sexual predators who engage in this opportunistic and villainous behavior often prey on strangers to be able to distance themselves from their crime. They mainly choose their victims based on their accessibility and ensure that they can commit their crime without getting caught.
Authorities learned that Micho and David committed another assault shortly after the kidnapping and rape of Reno.
Oh.
They picked up a prostitute in Sacramento.
This woman knew exactly what was coming and was able to push Davide away and escape the van. They sped off. She had a narrow escape, but maybe Davideo realized at that moment that if he wanted to control his victims in the future, he would have to find a way to immobilize them.
The next victim won't get off so easily.
The modus operandi of these criminals evolves over time. Sure, they continue to humiliate, dominate, and torture their victims. But the way they achieve their goals, the ways they avoid getting caught, and the means they employ to dominate their victims change as they narrowly avoid disaster. They're not stupid, they're adaptable.
They had removed the back seats of the van and installed restraints so they could immobilize their victims. It was obvious that they had planned everything. Then they decided to go hunting.
But hunting is expensive.
At that point, he had no money left. But Michelle Michaud was eligible for welfare, and she received a check for $500. Of course, she gave it to him as soon as she got it. While they were preparing for their hunt, or adventure, as Michaud would say, they stopped at a store. They bought a gag to put on their victim and prevent them from screaming and attracting attention. It was clear that they were preparing. They were getting ready for their adventure. Criminals prepare in advance to fulfill their fantasy. If they bought these objects, it was because they were part of their fantasy. They were preparing to use these objects in their interactions with their victims.
The story of the two criminals spread quickly, and Linda Marshall decided to confess the truth about the rape she had suffered in Pleasanton.
She had not revealed the identity of her attackers to the police because she was afraid of them. She was afraid of being killed. She was friends with one of their daughters. She knew them by sight and by name.
The authorities are now wondering how many victims there were.
This case was not like the others. Michelle Michaud and James Davideo chose their victims at random. They attacked members of their family, even their own children. They attacked their acquaintances. They picked up a prostitute. They attacked a young student from Reno. They attacked anyone. Basically, they were the kind of individuals who only cared about themselves. In addition, their drug addiction made them even more impulsive, more angry, more unpredictable. Drugs increased the risk of committing acts of violence. Early December 1997. For the past 9 weeks, two sexual predators addicted to methamphetamine, James David and Michelle Michaud, have been stalking and raping victims they choose at random. The manhunt launched by local and federal authorities has still not yielded any results. We sent out a wanted poster to all police departments in the Sacramento area. The FBI also released their mugshots, a report of the events, a description of their van, and specified that their whereabouts were unknown at the time.
As soon as the Sacramento police notified us that these men were wanted for crimes as serious as kidnapping and rape, we took the case very seriously.
But the constant movements of David, Joe, and Micho gave the police a clue. The couple returned to Pleasanton, they drove around all night, used methamphetamine, and talked about hunting.
Sometime after finishing preparations for the hunt or adventure, as Michaud Nahant called it, they began wandering the streets of Pleasanton, where David Joe had grown up.
On the morning of December 2, Vanessa Sampson left the house and walked toward her job less than a mile away.
The methamphetamine had completely unleashed her. She felt rage rising inside her as she saw all the places in Pleasanton where he had been humiliated and rejected.
Vanessa was a beautiful 22-year-old girl. Her father cared about her like the apple of his eye. She was his best friend and fishing partner. When she entered a room, she lit it up with her smile. She was the youngest in the family. She was also very close to her brother, sister, and mother. She was an exceptional young girl.
The victim was tied up in the van, her hands behind her back. Completely immobilized, a gag in her mouth, unable to scream for help and blindfolded so that she could not see what was happening to her. All of this demonstrates his desire to see his victim completely helpless. He did not want her to be able to see or foresee when she would be assaulted or humiliated. This is a good example of his extreme desire for domination.
At noon, Vanessa Simpson's mother called the Pleasanton Police Department to report her daughter missing. But Vanessa's disappearance was too recent to file a report.
In these cases, they wait before jumping to conclusions and declaring a crime to have occurred. In this city of 65,000 people, where 150,000 other people commute to work, it is not uncommon for a missing person to be reported, but very few cases turn out to be kidnappings.
Michelle Michaud continued driving north towards Sacramento, while James David assaulted Vanessa Simpson multiple times in the back of the van. But Michaud will soon have to stop at a gas station to fill up his tank and get some food and cigarettes. They then picked up Michaud's welfare check in Sacramento and headed south toward ECT, where he rented a hotel room.
They stopped several times along the way. At each stop, Michelle Michaud could have decided to release Vanessa Sampson.
David, Joe, and Micho took Vanessa into their room and continued their brutal assault. That evening, at 10 p.m., Vanessa Simpson's mother called the Pleasant Police Department. The officers reconsidered the situation and ultimately decided to file a missing persons report.
Vanessa was a very responsible young woman who lived an orderly life.
When she suddenly disappeared without answering her pager, without calling her parents, her friends, her boyfriend, or when she didn't show up for work, or... It all seemed very suspicious.
The police notified the media of Vanessa's disappearance. The next day, officers questioned residents in the neighborhood for information on the circumstances of her disappearance. Her friends and family joined forces to spread the sad news. Davjo and Meech left the hotel, taking Vanessa with them. The Pleasanton authorities investigated the disappearance of Vanessa Sampson, unaware that James DeVito and Michelle Michaud were wanted by the FBI. On December 3, 1997, the Pleasanton, California police searched for Vanessa Sampson, who had disappeared the previous day while on her way to work. After questioning everyone in the neighborhood, the police explored an initial lead.
A neighbor who was renovating his house directly behind us was on the roof with one of his friends. They heard a noise, a small scream. They immediately got up and saw a green van, a recent model, our right, starting up. Behind the wheel was a woman with long dark hair.
Police searched the neighborhood for clues. They find none. That same day, the FBI and local authorities in Reno and Sacramento continue their manhunt for Michelle Michaud and James DeVito, now wanted for 4 kidnappings and rapes. David and Mitchell wander aimlessly around the Lectio area to the south, before stopping at a motel located across the street from the courthouse where Michelle Michaud is due to appear for writing bad checks.
Even though they were high on drugs, it's no surprise that he stopped in the middle of this series of horrific crimes. They were in control. They knew what they were doing. It can be deduced that despite their drug use, despite the horrific crimes they had committed, they still knew right from wrong.
But they don't know that they are about to fall into the clutches of justice.
Early in our search, our agents learned that Michelle Michaud had arrived in Tao to appear in court. We also learned that she was scheduled to report to the Douglas County Courthouse, which is just across the street. We were also informed that Michelle and James usually stayed at the hotel directly across the street from the courthouse. So we immediately went to the Lakeside and Casino, where they confirmed that this was where he was staying. Two of our agents canvassed the casino for suspects and found James David. They caught him instantly inside the casino.
But capturing Michelle Michaud would not prove to be so easy.
After James was arrested in the casino, we hatched a plan to arrest Michelle. I was to disguise myself as a casino security guard and try to convince her to open the door for me. I knocked on the door and told Michelle that James was collapsed in the casino and wanted her. After knocking several times and explaining the situation to her in detail, she finally opened the door. We forcibly removed him from the room and arrested him.
The authorities seized their van. But there was no trace of Vanessa Sibla Johnson. Months after their crime spree began, James Dav and Michelle Michaud were arrested. The FBI and authorities in Sacramento and Doburn were finally able to question the suspects.
I spent some time with Michelle Michaud and found her to be very manipulative. She spoke openly about what they had done. But it was obvious that she was trying to protect herself. It was a dismal failure. It was very clear to everyone that she had willingly participated in the kidnapping of my victim and all the other victims.
People often believe that in a criminal relationship, the woman always plays the role of the victim. I have observed this situation in a few cases, but in many others, the woman plays a leading role. She is often just as guilty of deviant behavior as the man.
Michelle Michaud confessed his guilt and that of Davidio in the kidnapping and rape of Reno before collapsing, overcome with fatigue and the effects of methamphetamine withdrawal. On December 4, the operation to find Vanessa Simpson ended in general despair.
A truck driver found Vanessa's body in the snow. He stopped on the main hill and looked down the slope. Vanessa was lying 8 meters from the road in the snow like a piece of trash. It was horrible. Vanessa's mother prayed for days that she would be found alive. When her body was found, she was still grateful because she could at least give her beloved daughter a proper burial.
My only regret is that I arrived a day too late. If we had arrested David Geo and Micho the day before, we could have prevented Vanessa Sampson's death.
James Davidio and Michelle Michaud are being held in the Douglas County Jail. Davidio will only speak in the presence of his attorney.
When we discovered that Micho and Davidio were the prime suspects in the murder of Vanessa Sampson, we immediately notified the Douglas County Sheriff's Office that the two individuals they were holding in their jail were possibly guilty of murder. A few hours later, a Douglas County Sheriff's Office officer called me back to say that Michelle Michaud had approached a jail staff member and said she wanted to speak to someone about a murder. Davidio said Micho committed the murders, while Micho maintained that it was Davidio. Micho said she was driving when the murder occurred. It appears that Davidio strangled Vanessa from behind. Micho stopped the van, walked around it, opened the door, and Davidio placed both of her hands on the rope wrapped around Vanessa Sampson's neck. He looked at him and said, "Now we're connected." Rutinekid. Meaning that they had committed this crime together.
After an arrest, criminal gods sometimes turn on each other. In fact, that's often what happens. They're trying to save their own skin. They're selfish, narcissistic people who only care about themselves. That's why they blame their partner. He made me do it. No, he made me do it. And so on. When facing the death penalty, criminals who have committed such horrific acts lose all sense of loyalty.
On November 16, 1998, in federal court, Michelle Michaud agreed to plead guilty to complicity in the kidnapping of the Reno victim in exchange for his testimony against James Davio.
On May 1998,
James Davio was found guilty. He was sentenced to 22 years in prison. They both deny molesting their daughters. Prosecutors drop the charges and focus on Vanessa Sampson's murder. In May 2002, a jury finds James David and Michelle guilty of Vanessa's first-degree murder in...
they are sentenced to death.
James DeVito is everything. You think he is... He's a rapist, a predator, a scumbag. Michelle has made him a better predator. Michelle Michaud is a master manipulator. If she had wanted to spare Vanessa, she would still be alive today. She could have released her when she stopped to buy a drink at the convenience store. She could have released her at the welfare office. She could have released her at the hotel. She's the devil incarnate.
James David and Michelle Michaud are awaiting execution while their respective cases are still on appeal. Well, Vanessa's tragic death is still Angela Backer's.
Every year, on Vanessa's birthday, her mother has a mass said in her honor at St. Augustine's Parish Church. We go to noon mass, and after mass, we visit her grave. All her high school friends and her family, which now includes a few young children, throw a party for her. We release balloons and toast in her honor.
To her and celebrate her birthday.